Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an Asian, see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't going to be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Black won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control buildings and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 or 13 times for a lead. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folks got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about something like about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, who cares? Marching, they never changed anything.
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said, this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he said, nah, I won't know what's in the door. He said, you sure you won't see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on Pity Way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, "Shoot it!" So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles, the kid no one would pick, was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No. Nope.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Sixteen years ago, we broadcast a story about Marva Collins, a Chicago teacher who started her own elementary school on the city's west side, West Side Prep. Marva claimed that with love, hard work, and no-nonsense teaching, inner-city children could compete with anyone academically. It was, to many people, quite an inspiring story. But not to Charles Murray, author of the controversial book about race and intelligence called The Bell Curve. On page 399, Murray writes that Marva's celebrated anecdotes about her students are too good to be true, that there is no hard evidence of her success. We decided to check it out. Before we begin, let's go back to where we began 16 years ago.
You have it all here on West Adams Street, all the familiar big city blight. The forever broken windows, the burnt out flats, the disemboweled abandoned cars. And then you have 3819 West Adams.
The Canterbury Tales are about whom?
Jeffrey Jones.
They're about whom? How many were there?
There are no frills at West Side. The emphasis is on basic education, with an even stronger emphasis on literature and composition. There are no teacher breaks, no teacher desks. She is on her feet and over their shoulders all day, pushing them, cajoling them, and praising them.
Very, very good, Lisa. Very, very good. Cum laude.
And the results are apparent even to a casual bystander. Alert and challenged children being pushed way beyond the boundaries most school systems set.
Who's your favorite author?
Jeffrey Chaucer and Shakespeare.
Booker T. Washington and Hans Christian Andersen. My favorite book is The Greek Myth.
Greek Myth.
I like Fyodor Dostoevsky and Dante Alighieri and Shakespeare.
And your favorite book?
Divine Comedy.
Okay.
I like Ralph Waldo Emerson and Henry David Thoreau, and I like Charlotte Bronte's Jane Eyre.
So what happened to those 34 students we met at West Side Prep? Charles Murray says by implication that their apparent intelligence and promise was a fraud, that what we saw was just too good to be true. What was it? We traced 33 of the 34 and flew a group of them back to Chicago, back to West Side Prep's new location for a reunion of sorts.
Aren't you pretty?
To see if Charles Murray's allegations in The Bell Curve are true, to see whether or not these young men and women lived up to Marva's claim. Christopher Stubblefield.
We learned to read hard work.
The 8-year-old with a big voice is now at university in Texas. And Erica McCoy Pace graduated last spring from Norfolk State University. When you saw her last, she was listing her favorite authors.
Emerson, Henry David Thoreau.
And what about the rest of our class of 79?
Michael Anderson, Taylor.
Terry Holmes, owner operator of transportation company.
Latanya Singleton, preschool teacher.
James Lowe, staff sergeant, United States Air Force.
Sabrina Yates, sixth grade teacher.
Rossell Winters, law student.
Louis Johnson, operations manager.
Xavier Jones, teacher, criminal justice major.
Craig Brunner, clerk for the state's attorney's office.
I remember
I have said in front of all my classmates here that I want to become an attorney. And it's funny, I'm actually in law school and I graduate next year, and this college told me, oh yes, you can do it. You can do whatever you want to do. It's possible, and I'm living proof it is possible.
A number of you are teachers. Were you inspired by her to become teachers?
Definitely. She just gave so much to me personally in terms of always being reassuring. I mean, just the small things, like she would grab my face and say, pretty girl.
You're brilliant.
Yeah.
Up, honey, you're brilliant.
That's right.
Especially Craig. She would take his head and raise it up. Speak up, honey, you're brilliant.
Right.
And, you know, after someone telling you that,
every day.
Every day.
Five
days a week for 3 or 4 years, you know, that's in you. That becomes a part of you. You are brilliant, honey.
And then we were like doing Shakespeare. We put on the plays and we had the
But Charles Murray stated that claims of long-term academic achievement would typically fade as these children grow up.
Sagacious means what? Means you're very what?
Right. The words that we learned, it was nice because when we left and we heard someone talking, using a word, we knew what that word meant. And now in school, a lot of times we get the reading list on the course outline. I've read most of the books on that.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, oh, yeah, I've read that, I've read that, or the teacher will be talking about something. And I'm like, oh, yeah, 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 I read that book.
Fourth
all
grade.
The students may feel like this.
And Jether, where's Xavier?
Right here.
You use your notes? Your West Side Prep notes on Hamlet to write a paper when?
I used it in high school, and I also used it in English Lit class when I was in college. And looking back at my handwriting, I was like, wow. You know, and I was like, these are good notes.
Murray also raised questions about Marva's claims that 5- and 10-year-olds who'd been labeled unteachable were capable of reading Chaucer and Shakespeare. Well, Michael Anderson was said to have a learning disability when he entered Marva's school at age 9.
I had a client just a couple months ago brought up Shakespeare out of nowhere. And we sat after having coffee for 3 hours. You know? Well, what did you learn Shakespeare? Fourth grade. I knocked him off his seat. He couldn't believe it. Fourth grade?
And there is Erica, who was considered a hopeless case at age 6.
Basically, I was told that I was borderline retarded, that I would never read. So I was basically written off.
I was supposed to be put back a couple of grades, but I wasn't when I came to Ms. Collins.
When we saw Craig Brunner in 1979, he was reading his essay about Cleopatra.
Very, very long ago, there was a queen called...
What was the secret of her success, of motivation, or what?
The confidence, how you have a brain, you can do it on your own. You don't have to wait for anybody.
She killed herself with a poisonous snake.
Very, very true.
I say to every child, for example, Morally, there's no one with your eyes. There's no one with your nose. There's no one with your hair. That makes you really special.
These days, her message and methods are repeated by teachers she's trained for her 3 elementary schools in Chicago. She is mostly on the road, giving seminars for teachers all over the country. Above all, she tells them every child is teachable. Every child can learn.
Ask the slowest children in your class how many children know the rap songs, and they all raise their hands, and I'll say them for me. And I says, good. If you can do that, you can learn the Canterbury Tales in Old English, too. I don't know half of what those rap songs are saying, but they know every line. What makes us think, then, that they become such learning disabilities when they get to school?
But Charles Murray...
I don't know if my audio ran out or what. Okay. All right. Well, let's see. Today, hopefully you guys can hear me. I wonder what happened to that audio. Okay. As we close out the year and prepare for a new year, we're bringing back a... Probably one of my favorite, definitely one of my favorite guests, Patrick Collins, and today's podcast is titled The Marva Collins Way 2023. Now, Marva, Mrs. Collins is no longer in this plane of existence in the physical form that we knew her in, but her energy is still here, her son's still here, and education is definitely needed, and we have them on, I guess. I'm trying to see what happened to that 60 Minutes piece. It was a two-parter on top of that. All right, well, look, anyway, so today, the Marva Collins Way, 2023, with Patrick Collins, her son, and they, well, not only her son, I guess they were colleagues as well. Good morning, Patrick.
Good morning, L.A. Davis, and good morning, listening audience. I hope everyone had a blessed holiday as far as Christmas.
Oh, yeah. Well, mine was quiet, but it was good.
sometimes that's how you like it.
I've asked you this before, but we've got new people, you know, tuning in all the time. We just started our ninth consecutive year on Christmas Eve. So this is year nine for us. And with part of this, the Marva Collins story, which I call the Collins, I consider the Collins family story, I look at it as innovative. With and for people who are not familiar with Marva Collins, if you just type in any search engine Marva Collins, there'll be a bunch of information that comes back. She wrote books. She was interviewed on 60 Minutes. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we're having a...
You can hear me?
Hold on a second, let me try this.
Okay.
No.
All right, what about now?
Perfect. That's...
For those who are not familiar with Marva Collins, if you type in any search engine online, her name will come back, and then she was a book author. She wrote, how many books did she write? Two.
The Marva Collins Way.
I know I've got one of
Children.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. Ordinary Teachers.
Yeah, I've got the Marva Collins Way. I have that book. Yeah, there's
well,
a movie that was done
one.
About her.
I'll send you the other.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. I'll send you the address on that. Or email address. A movie featuring Cicely Tyson played Marva Collins, and Morgan Freeman played your dad, Mr. Collins.
Correct.
And then other actors played Marva's children. Of course, one portrayed you and your brother and your sister. And so if you go online and then on YouTube, type in, you can watch the movie that I just talked about. If it's on YouTube, it's still probably free.
It is.
If you go to Amazon, if you want to purchase, you can go to Amazon and purchase it. Now, the question, like, we're getting into a new year, and there's some people out there that they want to start their own school. Now, the way the Collins family did it was, I would say, very simple but yet effective.
Mm-hmm.
They took a simple idea, and it got big. Whereas some people, not all people, have a grandiose idea, but it's slow to come into fruition. So if you would play it back for us, I mean, your mother, did she come home one day and say, I'm starting at elementary school? How did that go?
Yes, that's pretty much exactly how it went. She came home and she was pretty much frustrated with dealing with the public school system, and she decided that she was going to use the $5,000 in her pension and start a school on the second floor of our home. Keep in mind there were tenants that were renting the upstairs apartment. And my mom said, you know, we've got to find them somewhere else to live, and I want to start my own school.
Oh, okay. So we have to find them some. Now, did she give them notice? I'm not, you know, whatever.
She did give them notice and found them a and she actually found them a bigger unit than what they were currently living in, and I think she paid either a month or 2 months rent to make it even more appealing so that they would take the offer and actually move.
All right, smart business move, so to speak.
Absolutely.
All right, so the family had a – your parents had a duplex.
Mm-hmm.
And it was – well, now – because I'm taking for granted, although she was a teacher, an educator, you know, obviously she had a vision that that apartment could become a school, and it was a one-room schoolhouse, if I'm correct?
Correct. And, you know, that is really one of, every time I hear the biblical passage of to walk by faith, not by sight. I don't think that she had the architectural prowess to know that it could be turned into mm-hmm. a school. She had the faith that it could be turned into a school. And she didn't know how. She didn't know where the boards were going to come from. She didn't know where the desks were going to come from. Well, heck, she didn't know where the students were going to come from. And it was the faith of definitely a wing and the prayer of I want to start my own school, and I'm going to use this space in which to do it.
Well, walk by faith, not by sight. Boy, that, all right. Didn't know where nothing was going to come from. Well, now, how did your dad react to that? Because all I know is the movie. But you were there in real life. And then how did you and your siblings, you know, when you first heard the idea reaction?
You know, everyone was supportive. Everyone got on board. Everyone was, when I say everyone, from my sister, my brother, my dad, it was a very supportive family. We were mm-hmm. kind of the Mocha Brady Bunch. That if one of us decided to do something, an endeavor of that magnitude, everyone lent their efforts. And do get a chance to watch the movie. I say probably about 75% of it is spot on accurate, and the remaining portion being Hollywood. But that's pretty much how it went down.
All right, because in the movie, well, if you can, like I said, from people who haven't seen the movie, okay, so she recognized, you know, well, she didn't have to go out and buy a building. You know, she used what she had.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the ingredients in faith of is whatever it might be, use it. So the family had that duplex. Now, the conversion into a one-room schoolhouse, and like you said, she was not an architect. Well, she was
Sure. But they actually mentioned that.
But
absolutely. They actually mentioned that in the movie. I remember one of Morgan Freeman's lines were Marva. They, you know, you have to frame things. You have to, you know, put in extra outlets and so forth. Those weren't concepts. And then my mom actually said that, Clarence, you can try to talk me out of it, but I'm doing this. And I think had my dad not been the supportive, strong individual that he was, she would have done it. She would have done it regardless.
Okay, all right. Now, when the so it was in the movie, you know, your dad and you and your siblings. And now, how old were you when? Give me the ages of you and your siblings at the time this was happening.
I was 10, so my sister would have been 7, and my brother was 13.
All right, youngins, okay. And what, well, what, if you can remember back, what was the first day of construction like?
And it's funny that you should have me hearken back to that day. Anytime I speak with you, it winds up reminding me of my first solo flight. I used to fly Army helicopters in Germany.
Mm-hmm.
And my flight instructor, Chief Warrant Officer Recker, said that fear is courage that has said its prayers. And that's exactly what the school was. As fearful and as doubtful as she was, the prayerful part of all of the concept wound up bringing it through. As children, there's what in the movie, they had us all christening the school and knocking down the wall that joined the two rooms.
I remember that scene. I remember
but really,
scene.
That was my brother and I. And I remember I took a baby sledgehammer and threw it. I was playing like I was the superhero Thor, and I took the hammer and threw it. It went through the wall, kept going, and broke a window. And my dad said, I don't want them up there helping. They're doing more damage than they are actually helping. And, you know, mm-hmm. I really wish that they had put that just like it was in the movie. But they changed it because, I mean, it was hilarious. I mean, as angry as he wanted to be, all he could do is shake his head and just kind of smile and say, you know, what if there had been a car down there or whatever? But, my brother and I tore down that wall. He framed it so it was structurally sound. And carpeted it and paneled it and just made it look absolutely wonderful. What you see in that movie was exactly, they put it to a T from the color of the paint to just every nuance. That's exactly how the school looked.
One-room classroom. So now you got through, now I imagine a significant portion. Well, for one thing, with the family participating in the remodeling or renovation of the school, you saved a whole bunch of money on labor. So now, I imagine, so you had to spend money on materials. Did you salvage some materials? I mean, what percentage of that maybe?
No,
Remember
that $5,000, I think $5,000 went a lot further than it would now. There's a scene in the movie where Morgan Freeman's character says, who would have thought that nails would cost so much? And I remember there was a lumber yard called McGuire right there on Lake Street. And we used to love to go with my dad, and we would play amongst all the wood and concepts that they had there.
Okay. Now, how long did it from start to finish? Start
7 days.
He had all of it completed in about 3 weeks. He would, and that's the thing. LASI, again, I hate to use that word hearken, so I'll use reflect. As I reflect back on that, he was working at Sunbeam as a line on the line, and they would produce things like irons and mixers and all kinds of things. So he worked from 6 in the morning until 3, 4:30 in the afternoon, and he'd come right home and work until 9, 10 o'clock at night. So he was putting in 15-hour days.
15-hour days, and he has a family on top of that.
Correct. So, I mean, he'd go to work every day, come home.
Now, how from How long did it take? Now, while you guys were working on that part, I imagine your mother was, I guess, doing the marketing to get students.
You know, back then there was no Facebook. There was no Instagram.
Yeah.
The word went out. The word went out by word of mouth. This was, in every sense of the word, a grassroots effort. This was the roots. There wasn't even grass. This was just the grass seed, and the seed kind of germinated and took a root and sprouted. But I think that there were two students there, and they were doing very well, and they told a couple parents, and they told a couple parents, and it kind of blossomed that way.
Well, now, the school started with five students?
Myself, my sister, and three others.
Okay, a total of five people. So, all right, Marva, your dad supplied you and your sister, and it was an elementary school, so your brother, I guess he was in junior high school by then?
Correct, he was in
high
junior
school.
High, yeah. Yes, yes. He was in junior high getting ready to start high school. Mm-hmm.
Now, your mother started an elementary school. Any particular reason why she started a elementary school and that was her niche versus what they would call back then a junior high school to middle school today or high school?
I can actually say, and this is me thinking for my mom, I don't think the school would have been as successful with the junior high school for the simple fact that the students would have been so entrenched in making poor choices that it would have, that
right.
I think a great deal of the day would have been dealt with just discipline.
You're right. I taught in the public school system in very briefly in D.C., Washington, D.C., and just the worst schools were the junior high schools, or what they call middle schools today. It takes 15 to 20 minutes, and it all depends on school. Not all of them are bad, but.
Right.
You know what? They need really social workers, in my opinion, at a lot of those schools. But that drove me in entrepreneurship. And when I did it was in the early to mid 80s. Now it's more, depending on the city or the part of the city, it's more dangerous, in my opinion. Unless you're in a private school sector. So, the Collins School was private. So it started out with three students. Did you start off in the fall semester or did you start off in the spring or what?
They started off in that summer. It started probably the third week of August and went until that first week of June.
Okay. All right. And now for the first year, now going into, I imagine she was constantly doing her grassroots marketing, word of mouth, what have you, to get more students. So now originally it was, just her and I guess family members or friends, doing the word of mouth thing. When did it start, Westside Prep, when did it start to get some traction?
When Faye Smith with the Chicago Tribune came out. Keep in mind when this was. This was the very late 70s, early 80s. The only media that you really had was your television, radio, and newspaper. So the newspaper was a very loud voice, especially when you see students on the west side of Chicago reading Shakespeare, students on the west side of Chicago with these amazing essays. I mean, how does that not capture the attention, not only of the, it was funny, there was one there was one of, you always have your detractors. There was one person that lived maybe 3-4 doors down from us and said, who's ever heard of a school in a house? And that was kind of a rhetorical question because I forget the gentleman's name, but there was a gentleman there in Germany. This man flew all the way from Germany. He had read about the school when it went into Time magazine. So rhetorically, who's ever heard of a school in a house? People in Japan, people in Germany. We didn't say that to them, of course. We just let the comment fall on deaf ears. But it was amazing. I'm kind of really happy that we're having this conversation because I can only think of what the school would be if it was something like that today. In today's era of social media, you talk about going viral. You talk about a reality show. You talk about all of the Instagram and Facebook and YouTube. There would have been a huge presence, and even the online aspects of it. How many parents would have wanted, there was a waiting list that she couldn't fulfill. If you remember at the end of the movie, they mentioned, I forget what it was, I don't want to over-exaggerate the number, but that waiting list could have been helped be fulfilled by doing a online presence, you know, some type of Zoom classroom or Google Classroom or something.
Well, you know, it's interesting to bring that up. It's I follow a lot of I would call entrepreneur educators, tutors, and one of them, her name is Gwen Lee. She's out of South Korea. She teaches English, you know, to people primarily in South Korea, but her income is like $500,000 a year, and she teaches classroom style about 1,000 students a month. But another probably 50 to 100,000 people are online. And, you know, you got the, you know, because now you can do videos on different topics and people can view those on demand when they want to. So, like, you know, I found out about your mother, as many people did in this country, 60 Minutes.
Absolutely.
60 Minutes.
LA, if I could jump in, she did two interviews.
It was the first one.
Absolutely. LA, if I could jump in just a moment here, as many times as I've been on your show, I almost feel embarrassed to ask this question. I've got a couple people that wanted to listen in. Can they just listen in just from calling the number?
Yeah, they can call in and 619-768-2945. They can call in and listen in, and if they want to jump into the conversation, all they do have to do is press.
Thank you. I'm sorry. So now we were at the 60 minutes. Yes, you were at the second 60 minutes.
Because she did two interviews, so I became aware of her. A whole bunch of people came aware of her for the first 60 minutes interview. And I played one of them, but I don't know where, you know, our library is big. But so that really put
that
her the on
the
radar.
One. That was the second
now,
one. Yes, that was the second in 94.
Mm-hmm. That was the second one. Okay. What the actor she was on the first time. Okay. Now, I know there was a lot of, because I saw, I was in Washington, D.C., and I watched, in 60 Minutes came on CBS, which is Channel 9 in D.C. So there's a lot of positive buzz about it. But back in Chicago, was there any blowback from the haters of the day?
Oh, absolutely. You know that you're doing something right when you have everyone's when you start to hear from your detractors. Think about what my mother did. She was seen as a turncoat. She was seen as abandoning the very flag in which she was supposed to be fighting for. She was a Chicago public school teacher that said that the system was broken and that she could do it better. And that was a huge, that literally was David fighting a Goliath of the Chicago public school system. Even to this day, only teachers that were very, very comfortable with their teaching prowess were her supporter. Everyone else said, you know, well, what she's doing is, you know, we're doing the same thing. We just don't get the overall accolades. And if that were the case, then the public school system wouldn't have been as broken as it was, or possibly still is. And whenever you say something is broken, you have to be part of the you have to be one of the answers to what is broken, as opposed to just pointing out that it's broken and leaving it at that. You have to have some type of plan. You have to have a call to action. You have to implement practices and scenarios that will change things and make them better.
Right. Well, the beef I have with public education is it's school with politics. And what your mother did was took the politics out of this classroom. And when you do that, you know, because a lot of these book cartels, they have a political say-so. So it's public schools, and then I think in Chicago, as well as probably some other cities around the country, I think the school system is unionized. So unionized teachers are typically more expensive. But, okay, you're paying the teacher more, but are the students getting the quality of education that matches, you know, whatever you're paying them? I'm more private school, yeah.
And I'm going to say it again for dramatic effect. L.A., when you, back then, they used to call the area a ghetto. Now it's the inner city. Now it's, those types of concepts. They don't call them that. But when you're coming from a suburb teaching children in the ghetto, children from disenfranchised homes, children with sleep in their eyes, mucus-encrusted noses, ashy knees, and those types of concepts, you say, or then the children come to the classroom with behavioral problems, you say the students in this area don't want to learn. So why should I teach? That's just not me thinking that way. That's just not me saying so. That's exactly why students even today fail. Even in your very beautiful schools, I worked with numerous schools there in DeKalb County and they're in Atlanta. They're in Georgia, and they would build these beautiful schools, and you would have children. It was just a concrete housing. The children were just in a holding pattern. They didn't necessarily learn anything. They came to school to eat. They came to school to go to gym and recess, and that was school for them. And if that happens at a very early age, when the child is in kindergarten and first grade, their academics only become weaker. What do you think is going to happen? That's what we were talking about before, in that middle school or in that high school. Keep in mind, I have had the opportunity and the privilege, I will definitely call it that, the privilege of having taught in over, 4,000, worked with over 4,000 teachers and administrators, worked in over 200 some odd schools, and in one prison. When I wound up teaching there at the prison, that to this date is one of the crown jewels. I told the warden I didn't want to know what the inmates had done, and I told them the first day, just because we lack a noble past doesn't mean we lack a noble and successful future. He asked me, did I want a guard in there with me? I told him, you know, we are that no one is making you be here, that we're going to learn together. And one of the individuals, one of the men, his name was Christopher Knight. I'll never forget him. K-N-I-G-H-T. And when he told the story of he couldn't read. And what, 6 months from then, he went to, he had a visiting day with his 7-year-old child. And he read his child a story. I believe it was The Little Engine that Could. He asked me for a book. He said, what will be a good book for this age group? And that was the only one that I had in my briefcase. And he read that story, and he came up, and I said, the difference of night and day. And he had a tear in his eye. I had a tear in my eye. He gave me the man hug. He was going to shake my hand. And I said, you know what? Give me a hug. And it was really one of those moments that you would see as though it were scripted, as though it was some type of movie of the week. But that's what education does for an individual. That's why education is so powerful. That's why to hear students say, Mr. Collins, I really feel good about me when I'm with you. I'm currently working with the students there at the Great Charter School. And the children literally say, Mr. Collins, you said you were going to come into our room today, and you didn't come, and we were waiting for you. I mean, to have children looking forward to education like that, to go home and tell their parents today what I've learned, all of the different to have a 5-year-old tell you about Bernoulli's principle of fluid dynamics, to have a kindergartner doing a story like The Three Little Pigs, and bringing in Hooke's Law of Elasticity, and asking a 5-year-old, then how did the third little pig show the principles of Hooke's Law of Elasticity? And that is nothing short of.
You're absolutely right. Let me ask you, Dad, when your mother was alive and you guys were in school, did she take the class on any field trips?
There's actually a scene in the movie. They went to the Mercantile Exchange, the stock exchange there in Chicago, when they were working with the story of the Merchant of Venice. But in the beginning of the movie, she tells the story of one of the teachers asked for permission from the principal to take the children to the zoo. And I believe the teacher's name, it was a fictitious name, but this really happened. I believe her name was Miss Dutton in the movie. And Cicely Tyson's character says, Miss Dutton, do they know which zoo that they're going to? And there were two zoos in Chicago, Brookfield Zoo and Lincoln Park Zoo. And it was just the overall concept of that if the children are going to the zoo, they should know that elephants come from the pachyderm family, that apes come from the primate family, and so forth.
Okay. I'm thinking about this. Now she taught elementary. The school's an elementary school, Westside Prep. Which I guess for most people, introducing them to the building trades might, be, introducing kids to anything at any age, I guess it matters, is very subjective. But now, in 2023, because you taught at the, you taught at the prison as well, and I believe it was academic, but what if there was a Marva Collins component that the methodology, let's put it that way, the method, Marva Collins methodology, that included the building trades where people can, and there's an academic part to that too, but learning
Absolutely.
How to repair cars, plumbing, house building.
It's really,
you
we got
started off, you have to renovate first.
Absolutely. That would be something that would be out of my overall scope, but it is something that is so desperately needed. As much as I can beat the drum of education as much as I know the power of being able to read and the doors that reading opens up, some students learn differently.
Mm-hmm.
That the trades, as far as being a, as far as masonry, as far as plumbing, as far as being an electrician, all those concepts are very, very key also for some students. But you mentioned auto mechanic. There was a school, their CEO Academy in Nashville, Tennessee. And it was a, I don't know whether he was a multi-millionaire, but it was a, someone who was very wealthy or was wealthy, and he supported the concept of entrepreneurship. And it was called CEO Academy, and you had to bring a you had to bring a product to sale within, I think it was three or four weeks, and children had lawn cutting services, babysitting services, and the children were anywhere from age 10, I think, up to 15 or 16. But there was also a school that I worked with there in Pennsylvania that was an auto mechanics. They did auto mechanics, and I said, if you're going to work on cars, why not work on some of the most premier cars in the world? And I taught them about Enzo Ferrari and Pininfarina, and the bodies are sculpted there in Portofino, Italy. And we took them on a field trip to the Ferrari dealership. And I cautioned the children that we're not going to, gawk at the cars and touch them. And the children acted as though that their parents had those automobiles in their driveways. And the general manager called the owner, and the owner came in. He says, I drove 23 miles to see the students that my general manager was raving about. And he told them how a Ferrari mechanic, I believe back then, made over, I think it was $100 and some odd an hour, came to work in white coveralls, had a has a 401k plan. That's the difference between being a back alley mechanic and hustling and actually having a career. And then some of the students went on to, one of them was working with Porsche, and one of them was working with Alfa Romeo. They wound up writing me letters. But that's what happens when you inspire children. Mediocrity does not inspire men to greatness. Men are only going to be great, and I mean men as far as mankind. That includes women, too. They can only be great if you do great things with them.
Right. Well, now, one of the topics that I'm just assuming that was taught at Westside Prep was history.
Mm-hmm.
Class?
Correct.
Was it American history or world history, or how was it approached?
It was world history.
Okay.
It was world history. And the children, and when I say world history, if we were learning about Shakespeare, or if we were learning about the British Isles, or some concepts about Australia. And it's funny, again, when I only these conversations bring back so many memories. When we went to London on a field trip, I remember my mom took us to Big Ben and some of the other sites there. They're the Parliament building, and they're in London. And I remember reading about those concepts. Or one of the flights that I had when I was there in Germany.
Westside Prep took a class to London?
No, that was just a family trip between my parents and my sister and brother. Yes, it was a family trip. But one of the stories that I share with the teachers that I work with as far as exposing your students, it was a book called Our World. It was a open court reader, a second grade reader. And in that book, they had a story about Germany. and it said that another word for Germany was Deutschland, and Neuschwanstein, this huge castle, which is actually the castle that Walt Disney patterned his castle after there in the Magic Kingdom. But I bring that up in which to say I was flying from Stuttgart to Munich, and we flew over Neuschwanstein in a Huey helicopter. I was the co-pilot, and I remember lowering the visor on my helmet because a tear came to my eye. At that exact moment, it was the epiphany of this is why you get an education. An education enriches you universally. An education makes you comfortable from your next-door neighbor's house to the White House. It makes you capable of speaking to anyone in any country in the world. You don't have to depend on sports or current events. You can talk to people about anything as long as they're speaking the same language that you're speaking. So, yes. So that whole history component, so it was history, it was geography, it was vocabulary, it was science, it was all of the disciplines all wrapped up in one. And I think that's what made the school such a gem, such a wonderful place in which to be. Every day was something new. Every day was something every day was you were a sponge to being able to absorb all that my mother had to offer.
Right, because I'm getting ideas right now. Well, now about, and you might know this already because you're from Chicago. About 45 minutes to an hour away from Chicago, there was, at least the way I was told, it was. Part of the Underground Railroad was in that area, in Pembroke, which is in Kankakee County, Pembroke, Illinois, and within Pembroke, Illinois is a village, Hopkins Park. And Hopkins Park, Illinois, which is a village within Pembroke, Illinois, it's a black township, and the first black township in the United States, at least documented black township, to get a municipal charter, also happened in Illinois. What's it called? Brooklyn, Illinois, and that town is Brooklyn. I think is over 100 years old. And that was started by, that wasn't the first black township, but it was like within the first two in that state. And Brooklyn, Illinois still exists. The first one was started by a guy named Free Frank McWhorter. He was born a slave in Missouri. He purchased his freedom. He bought his, he bought out his slave contract from his master, then moved to Illinois, and he bought like maybe 80 acres of land and started his own town. So, that's part of that history thing. But like, because when you guys built that school, you know, you can put a history lesson in there, you can put a mathematics lesson in there, you can put a science lesson in there, a building trades lesson in there. There's a whole lot of topics that you can that can come out of just, you know, how you guys got the school started. That you can connect to academics, history and all that other thing. But now, as you were speaking, when you said Lena, I was thinking, you know what, you guys can probably even have a traveling boarding school today if you wanted to, or at least some type of
that would be,
you know, trip there where kids will pay for it, parents will pay for it. In other words, did you guys teach any foreign languages there?
No, not at the school when my mother had it. When I was principal, the students were part of the Japanese language program. We didn't have any of the students go actually to Japan, but they said the it was a program through the United States government and of foreign exchange, and we got all types of resources as far as tapes and those types of concepts. And a couple of children actually came to the school from Japan.
Okay. Oh, man. Well, share that experience with us.
It was two students. They were there for an entire semester. And one of the concepts that kept them from continuing is they didn't sponsor. That was keeping the students there on the west side of Chicago, on the south side of Chicago. I think that the couple that was sponsoring them, they either their work or something, I think they worked for Colgate Palmolive and they moved them, and so they were only able to stay one semester, but they were very diligent students. They were very open to the learning process. And wanted to very, very, very well disciplined. Their uniforms were immaculate. Yes, it was a very positive experience.
Man, well, that what you guys accomplished is, it's still relevant. Now, let's bring it up to 2022, going into 2023. Now, there's, I guess, what you would call a reboot of West Side Prep, but it's going to come out of, what, Nevada?
Correct. And that'll be the Marva Collins School of Nevada there in Reno, Nevada.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And when is that open, or has it opened yet, or what?
They're looking to open doors in 2024. They're currently looking for a building. They're actually going the route of being a little more dependent upon the federal government than my mother was. We've already gone down that avenue as far as how independent my mom was as far as to get things done on her own. But yes, they're getting a building through city government and those types of concepts,
right.
And for urban renewal and beautification and education grants and all of those things. Some of the concepts that I don't even understand.
Okay, now has your book been released yet?
We are putting the finishing touches. They are actually trying to get Morgan Freeman to do the audio forward for the book.
Okay.
And they're looking to release spring of 2023.
Okay, all right. And now, of course, you do consulting work as well, right?
Correct.
All right.
In the areas of
now,
teacher empowerment.
Now, if somebody wanted to hire you as a consultant, what type of consulting do you do?
That would range between teacher empowerment, so teaching teachers to become better teachers, classroom management, actually giving students the proper keys to the overall educational kingdom, so that teachers can disseminate lessons. Phonics, teaching children to read phonetically, and language arts. That would include all of the language arts, the literature, the Shakespeare, all of the concepts that would turn children not only into early readers, but the children in the middle school to students that love reading. As a matter of fact, I just ordered a book, the Bernard Miles Children's Tales from Shakespeare. That is out of print. I got it from Thrifty Books. It was, like $13. But it has the most beautiful mm-hmm. illustrations. It has Macbeth in a children's version to the point where it's not the old English. Just a very well-written book and a very well-illustrated book. One of the crown jewels of my of my consulting is working with a school there. I think it was the Center for New Horizons, I believe is the name of the school. It was there in Decatur, Georgia. And the deputy superintendent said, Mr. Collins, we want you to work at this school. And this was the alternative school to the alternative school. These are children that had burnt down buildings, physically assaulted teachers, robbed convenience stores. And I remember telling Dr. Bowie, I said, and what do you want me to do with the students there? They said, Mr. Collins, if anybody can work with them, you can. And I remember I walked in and I shared this, the type of suit and the brand for a reason, not for bragging rights, but I had on a three-button Armani suit, and one of the young ladies said, sir, you take that suit off and we can do some things. Now, keep in mind, these were eighth graders, ninth graders, tenth graders, and she said, you take that suit off and we can do some things. I said, well, how about we keep the suit on and some things done? And I remember it was 10:15, and I asked one of the students, knowing that I didn't have any rapport with the students, there was no way I could just walk in and say, you know, I'm here to teach you, and you're going to listen, and this is the lesson, because that wouldn't have gone very well. I asked one of the students what time it was, and the student said 10:15, and I said, if you're not having a good time by 10:30, I will leave you to your vices. So will you let me work with you until 10:30? And one of the students said, yeah. And I said, yes, Mr. Collins, will suffice nicely. And surprisingly enough, the child reciprocated with, yes, Mr. Collins. And I did the children's story of Beowulf with them. It was written at about a sixth, seventh grade level. And the same young lady that said, if you take that suit off, we could do some things, is now telling me the archetype for the protagonist. She says that they're brave. And I said, you paid Mr. Collins a compliment when I walked in that they're what? She said, oh, yeah, handsome. And I had to smile and strong and so forth. But what was really key is when we got to Grendel and then we were talking about the antagonist. I said, what are some of the archetypes of the antagonist? And they said that they wear black. And one of the students said that they commit their crimes at night. And I said, let's look at that. And I told them what an oxymoron was, like jumbo shrimp, pretty ugly, and so forth. And I said, what's the oxymoron about the antagonist committing their crimes at night? And the child said, Mr. Collins, the oxymoron of the children of an antagonist committing their crimes at night, that if you know what you're doing is wrong and you have to wait until night in which to do it, you probably shouldn't be doing it. And right. I mean, that was it. So now you've got a philosophy class. Now you've got an ethics class. Now you've got a history class. Now you've got a language arts class all mixed into one. And when I left, one of the children said, I wish you could be our teacher. And I said, well, you got to love the one you're with, because their teacher was standing right there. And I said, you know, Mr. Collins is very flattered. And I said, you know, one of the reasons why I'm here is to show your instructor how to do these concepts and so that they can do them with you. And then the child said, after you leave, she's not going to do this stuff with us. I said, well, the last thing that was left in Pandora's box was hope. I can only hope. And the teacher was looking over her glasses at them like, you know, you wait till this man leaves. You guys are trying to embarrass me. But, I mean, that was instant rapport. I mean, the children, right. I mean, it wasn't one of these concepts of if you don't listen, I'm going to kick you out of the class. If you don't listen, any of these types of threats and ultimatums. It was a group of children learning. And that's my gift. That's what I do. Rather than breaking my arm, patting myself on the back, as idiogrammatically incorrect as it is, children and pets love themselves some Mr. Collins.
Now, you work on a consulting basis. What is, and you also, when you were at the prison, what topic did you teach there?
Language arts. Strictly language arts.
Language arts. Okay. Well, that's, reading is very fundamental, and that can open up the doors to many other things as well.
There was actually a request.
I'm going to put you
put on the break there for just a second, and then you can go into that. But the warden actually got a reading list because the students in my class, he said they actually wanted me to work there, and it was just so – it was such a depressing place to actually work. You had – and I'll try to find some of those emails and send them to you, but the warden said – I would walk past the cells, and there would be other – some of the inmates that were in my class, they're now teaching their cellmate. They're actually going over these stories with their cellmate. And he said he had never seen anything like it. He said, you know, we really need you here. And I just – it was just such a depressing place to be. It really was. And, you know, as wonderful as those stories are, for every one of those stories, I probably have every positive story. I have two that can go the other way. I mean, just walking to the overall classroom and just having men say all kinds of concepts, which I definitely can't say on Blog Talk Radio, but it was just a very depressing place in which to be. And it was one of those concepts of not that I love Rome more or Caesar less, and myself being Caesar, I had to look out for Caesar. I really did. It was just it just took so much out of me each time that I was there. And
now,
I would
speaking of Blog Talk Radio, which is the speaking of Blog Talk, which is the platform we're on right now, when originally. I think because we just started our ninth year on the 24th of this month.
Congratulations.
Thank you. There is a Blog Talk interview. I didn't do it. And I found out years after the fact. But your mother was interviewed by somebody on Blog Talk Radio years ago.
I didn't know that either.
It's in our, it's not my archives, but it's because I did hear it. And there, because when I first, I found you. I would some of this, you know what, find Marva Collins. So I think she could have, how long has she been gone?
Oh, my gosh, my mom passed in June of 2015.
Okay. She was still living when I started this. Okay.
Correct.
I believe. So, but for some reason I couldn't connect it with some website that had a phone number on it, but nobody ever returned the phone call. And then years later, I found that, like I said, somebody interviewed her on Blog Talk Radio, which if you put in Marva Collins in the Blog Talk Radio search engine, it's not in our because we didn't interview, but somebody else. So then after I found out she had passed away, I said, well, I almost gave her, I said, she did. I remember the 60 Minutes piece. I said, well, maybe I can find one of her children. And then some kind of way I found you. And then,
I know, that was amazing.
Yeah, and then we went from there. But, it is. So people want, like I say, she's got interviews on, or this document, she's well documented on YouTube and internet. So people that if you haven't, if you're not familiar with Marva Collins, She did some great stuff, of course, with the help of a lot of people. But I think there's so much that you guys accomplished that you can, I mean, it could be field trips, international. I mean, if you want to learn Spanish, the Marva Collins way or whatever, trips to Spain or Mexico or whatever. There's a lot of intellectual property that she left behind.
I think that I'm going to need you as my head of marketing, and we need to get you going there so that you could wind up being the head of marketing.
Thank you.
So
I jump all over that because I'm looking at now it. One of the things I think from my point of view, is that she had positive expectations
mm-hmm.
from the students. So you
Absolutely.
Take somebody who's young, or really at any age, but particularly when they're young, really young, you know, elementary school age, and, you know, they're trying to find their identity, okay? And, you know, it was, I mean, just pure positive energy. And when you feel good about yourself, you can learn anything. So, people, go on YouTube. There's two 60-minute interviews. Did Morley Safer do both of them?
He did.
Those interviews?
Correct. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, yeah, go on. They're on YouTube. Let's put in Marva Collins 60 Minutes on YouTube. And those interviews. And then Patrick. Is he's in one of those videos because he was the headmaster at the Milwaukee school?
I was a teacher at the Milwaukee school and headmaster at the school on the south side, Chicago.
Okay, all right. At the peak, go ahead, I'm listening.
No, something that you just said there about the belief system, I'm not sure the exact chapter in the book of Proverbs, but it says, as a man thinketh in his heart, so he is. And that was kind of my mom's credo. That's everything that we just spoke about. It just looms like a shadow in everything that from the men at the prison, from the children at the school for New Horizons, I had the belief system that they could. And the children just followed
right.
along.
Right, because I'm looking
That's
at
what we
the,
were talking about.
Yeah, I'm listening.
No, I'm listening.
That's
what we were saying about the about that Chicago public school teacher. If you think one of the students became a Chicago police officer, and he was talking to me, and he was saying during roll call in the mornings, it was Area 4 is the west side of Chicago. And he said the watch commander or the whoever does the morning roll call said, go out and patrol the jungle. So how do you treat a wild animal when you're in the jungle with a great deal of trepidation? So if you tell your officers that they're patrolling the jungle, they will treat the residents there like wild animals.
Right. Right. Let me bring on, and people, if you want to jump in the conversation, 619-768-2945. Chris Collins, I'm going to come to you moment. Matter of fact, let me come to Chris Collins right now. No relationship to Patrick Collins.
Patrick Collins.
But he teaches people. Well, I'll let him explain himself. Chris, you there?
Yes, sir, I am. And very nice to meet
Chris,
you, Mr.
Yeah,
Collins.
Chris Collins, this is Patrick Collins. I don't know if you ever met with his mother, the late and great Marva Collins, but you put in that search engine, she's two interviews, about 60 minutes interview. I think Ronald Reagan wanted her
Officer
to
Secretary of Education. offered her education, Secretary of Education. Mm-hmm.
Right, and then a scrolling marquee on our Blog Talk Radio thing today is a picture of his mother with George Bush II and his wife Laura Bush.
Correct.
So, but Chris, explain what you do, because I believe the Marva Collins methodology could be married to what you do. Chris, tell us, for those who don't know, or explain to Patrick, who's here right now.
Okay. I'm the founder of a project called HOPE, Housing Our People Everywhere. And I like acronyms, so I tell people humans on planet Earth to begin with. And that means all of us have it inside of us because it's who we are. And that we're human beings, we're the human race, but we're not being human. And I love this program that Barbara Collins had done. I've been sitting here listening. I want to engage with our children every day after school and show them that they have a positive purpose to change what's around them and what will always surround them. And not just the kids, but the kids are going to, I want them to be able to design the cities of the future, working with all of our college students and every community and all of our architects, and doing what they love to do, and that's mess with computer games. But the number one video gaming system in the world is civilization building, and it's the adults are doing it, the kids are doing it, and, you know, I want to truly do it because we have a way to end the homeless problem everywhere on the planet and also have a pay-it-forward, pay-it-back program for the kids that, as they go through this program, they earn a home that they'll never know homelessness from. Now, that house don't have to be the only thing they have. We want to be able to, you know, have our innovation labs. But the innovation labs are going to be for everyone because every person is a creator every second of the day in their own creations, because no one will ever have another person's thought. And you can't make up anyone's mind for them. But right now, we don't necessarily show equality because the haves look at the have-nots as less than them. And there's no one on earth that has a less of a life than anyone else. Everyone's life is just as important as another. And we're only as strong as our weakest link. But our children are pure love. And the adults need to start learning from our children because they're going to be the teachers. Because when they come home in the afternoon and say, I want you to come see what I did today. And when the parents show up and the kids look at them and say, you can come tomorrow and help me do it too. And within an hour or two, they can change a life and get someone that is struggling to starting to strive. And then as they move out of that transitional situation, they start to thrive. But at the same time, we have to bring the system in a change, because we can't put people in a category because everyone is individual. And if you deal with each individual and what their needs are, we're creating jobs, we're creating a stronger resource than what we already have, but we're able to take these people that are costing money to keep them alive and have them struggle to survive to an easier life because, you know, of course, homelessness is, it will work you to death. You will work harder being homeless and having nothing than having an opportunity to have a life that you
Amen.
Can breathe. And, you know, we're only as strong as our weakest link, but at the same time, let's make our chain out of titanium. And if you look at the palm of your hand, it's pink. every palm on earth is pink. So that shows you a human race. They don't know racism until we teach it to them. And every time we set up and show nothing but the bad history, we're setting them up to repeat it, because they come outside and start shooting each other. And it don't even really matter what the color of the skin is. It could be a color of something you were wearing. And I want them to know that they don't have to live by a gun that takes a life. So we can win this war without a weapon of mass destruction, and we can do it with weapons of reconstruction. I did build the greenest built home in 2011 in the middle of the woods with cordless screw guns to prove I could do it in any jungle on the planet, and got a congressional endorsement. It was hand-delivered to President Obama in the Oval Office and his administration, and it was ignored. But in that letter, it stated that we had came up with a way to give the homeless homes and the jobless jobs. It's a pretty bold statement to get said to the president and for them to ignore it. Because 2012, we had another housing crisis, and that's where all the banking systems came in and took everybody's homes. And then we just had something that was just never done in history, and that was shut down the world. And they just wanted to see if they could do it. It was a test. But you know what? We all passed. And we can't be followers, because everyone can lead, because they're all alike. But we have to turn on their dimmer switch and just see how bright they're going to be. You're not going to flip their switch overnight. So it takes repetitive dedication. And I think, you know, this program that you guys were involved in here would be a beautiful marriage to It's Already Written. And, you know, we wanted to have a new public school systems. We have a few different projects to help fund them so that every child will get private school teachings. Because you just because you don't have doesn't mean you don't need to get.
Mm.
But we do need to make it safe and stop the violence. And our children don't know violence until they see it from us. They don't know envy. They don't know spiteful. They don't know any of that. They learn everything from us and what they see. So let's show them that we're willing to open our eyes, take the blinders off, and look around and actually realize that your problem's my problem, and it ain't a big problem if we all do it. And I've been doing this since 2005. I built a home in 2006 where the eye of the storm came across for Hurricane Katrina. And that house saves $11,000 a year in insurance versus the wooden one next door to it. But it's because of what it's made of. It's a commercial product. I have machinery that makes 2 feet of material per second. There's 3 factories online right now that can produce over 100,000 linear feet of material a day, and that's every component cut to the length, where all you have to do is an ABC, 1, 2, 3, put a half-inch screw through 2 pieces of metal and move.
Wow.
And there's no gun to shoot, but it's a screw gun, and this gun saves a life. So mm-hmm. If you want to live by a pistol grip, let me teach you this one. Because every time you aim it and pull it straight, you save a life. But it's not only saving their lives, it's saving yours. Because what else will this do for you? It can give you up to a $60 an hour job.
Mm-hmm.
I can give you a $20 an hour job doing it right now, because we need it done.
Mm-hmm.
These 3 machines, the 3 factories, you know, for just a proven example, there's 70 people working in Tennessee with Randy, and he's building 4 to 5 8-foot by 20-foot homes a day, complete, ready to move into. You know, if you look at just our children, in my school system here, there's 30,000 students, and every one of them love to learn when they're not hungry. So, you know, of course, I partnered with a friend of mine, Carlos, and he's got a patented greenhouse that grows fish, vegetables, and mushrooms. The mushrooms alone in the greenhouse can supplement your income and pay what it's costing you to live right now in your city. But if you look at this as being a way to supply the restaurants with food, fresh food, that even the kids can be involved in watching it grow, and fish, they now have the supply of food that they can cook and give it out to every child after school and feed them anything they want to feed them, you know, or anything the kids want to eat, so that they have the fuel for the future to not worry about being hungry and where that meal's coming from. And they can go over here and do something for an hour or two and make sure their academics are right. But they could change someone's life that night. And if we did this across the nation, we have enough, we can produce enough material to make enough homes, temporary homes, to house all the homeless in the United States in the next 12 months. So I put out a challenge to be in a minimum of 50 cities in 50 weeks. We have 52 weeks in this next year. And I'll be in Chicago on February 3rd doing a build, but how many days are between now and then? So I'm going to L.A. And they just did a state of emergency on Skid Row, first act of Karen Bass, the mayor. And I've been talking all through the holiday right here with the mayor's office. I was on the phone with him yesterday. I'm ready to show up there, but not do just a presentation, because they already have my PowerPoint. Not just to do the presentation, I'm going to do a demonstration. But what I would like to have behind me is as soon as I stand up this demonstration, I want to see a semi-truck pull up, and I want to call them out on their state of emergency, because all they got to do is pick up a gun, and they'll start changing everything they see. But this material is made out of recycled steel, washers, dryers, refrigerators, stoves, water heaters, and cars. Don't necessarily have to be destroyed by a disaster, but the material from the disaster can recover and rebuild that disaster, creating a sustainable way of life. Mm-hmm. And being an NGO, I found out that I could partner with anybody I want. So I decided to partner with every child on earth and give them this gift. But also, every adult has to earn it by learning it. And everybody will own it equally. But you'll never be alone when something's going on that you need something, because we can create it, and we can do it from the money we're already spending every month. I don't like asking for donations. Mm-hmm. And I figured out how, if you spend money at 250 to 300 Fortune 500 companies in all 50 of our states, we get a percentage and you get cash back on everything you spend. And if we got a penny on it for the billion items that's going to be sold on Amazon today, then how would I need to ask you for a donation to pay for this? But Amazon, Walmart, Starbucks, Home Depot, Lowe's, so even the material we're going to buy from the local distributors to do these houses, we can get cash back every month to continue to be able to do more. And that's up to 20%. But we've also set it up in 50 states that your AT&T, Verizon, T-Mobile phones, Frontier Internet, Vivint Security System, LifeSteal, if you pay one of those bills, so I'm not asking anybody to go get a bill. I'm saying you're already paying the money. Put your account number in this website. It won't ask for a credit card. All it's asking for is your support. By you supporting it, that Fortune 500 company will give us 20% of what you're already spending every month. Pay them. Pay your bill. 20% will come to this project. And in 17 states and 26 countries, we get electric and gas. And all you do is put your account numbers in the website. It'll keep you from your bill rising because it locks it. But in 2 years, I can lock it again. Now, I know everybody in the country, their electric and gas bill and throughout the world has more than doubled. It's went 150% more money than you're spending right now at a minimum. And I know because my mom, her bill was $35, and now her bill's $200. Okay? Hers went up a whole lot. But I didn't sign her up because her bill was so low. I thought she was on a retirement budget billing thing. No, it doesn't matter about your age. It doesn't matter about your disabilities. You're going to pay. So we want to take these houses off the grid, but utilize what's already on the grid to be able to do this. And
Chris,
spreading the word. Go ahead.
Chris, I've got my hand raised like I'm here in the third grade. I definitely think that there's some synergy. This was 2018. I was working with a concert there in Hawaii, with Stand Firm, that was supporting soldiers with PTSD and those that were afflicted with those that were dependent as far as drug addiction and so forth. And seeing the homeless problem there just really saddened me. And I was working with Governor IG there in Hawaii. And got, I'm sure that you're probably familiar with a yurt, right? Those sustainable homes.
Yep.
They're kind of like a tent. But I forget the company on the internet. I got them to donate 200 yurts, and Home Depot and Lowe's, probably the only time that they've ever worked together. Lowe's did the foundation, and Home Depot built the actual yurts. Governor ID got some donated the land there on Kona, and Dwayne Johnson did the ribbon cutting ceremony. He said he didn't want any press there. So we took 200 people off of the street and actually got them sustainable homes because it's so climatic there in Hawaii. That type of home works. Nothing as weather proven as it seems like what you're doing, Chris. But, yes, I still have those contacts. I'm sure that you have the same ones because you mentioned Lowe's and Home Depot. But I still have those contacts if they could provide any support for what it is that you're currently doing.
No, that'd be wonderful. I would love to get your contacts because it's actually those people that you reach that done something. And, you know, I did this through a payment source. And I just wanted it to where I just knew there was people going to Walmart, to, you know, spending all this money out of their paycheck. But if I could give them back up to 15 to 20% of that and we could get a donation as well, then that was something I wanted to go towards because I don't like asking for donations, you know. So,
sure,
but I do have women and stuff now that will. So. Yes, I would love to have that information. That would help out.
Well, I do have a meeting that I'm going to need to walk into. L.A., if you could please make sure that Mr. Collins has my contact information, And this is very, this is very intriguing. My nephew, he's an MIT graduate, and one of the summers he was in India, I believe, working on thrust ratios and those types of concepts. Where in the inner city do you have our children learning to be as far as studying aerospace and telecommunications and some of the more cutting edge types? And as you said, LA, earlier, what Chris is currently doing as far as building, he mentioned the sustainable garden with the mushrooms, that CEO Academy, they were growing produce to sell to the local subways there for the lettuce and tomatoes and onions that Subway was using, and they had a contract to buy all of the produce as far as the lettuce, tomato, onions, and green peppers and mushrooms, mm-hmm. and those types of things. So those are the types of entrepreneurial efforts, and that doesn't take a college degree, but it does take someone who has effort. It does take someone who has drive. It does take someone who has the vision to say that I want to work hard. And I think what really was key of what Chris said, everything was very poignant, but failure costs much more than will work harder at being a failure than you'll ever work at being a success.
Patrick, before you go, I got one person that I know she probably wants to holler at you real quick. Reba, are you there?
Yes, Reba? I'm here. Happy Kwanzaa.
Reba, your mic's open. Get your shout out on before he leaves.
Absolutely, absolutely. Okay. I can take the time.
Thanks. Go ahead. I'm so excited to have you on again.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm a Spanish teacher from Chicago.
Okay.
So I do have an event, and I thought about you and the brother LA, and I spoke about you, and I was glad that he was able to get you. We have the event that Chris will be attending, and thank you so much, Chris, for the support. Friday, February 3rd, 2023. So it's going to be in about a month. It's an educational conference.
I'm there. All I need is the invite.
Okay.
I'm there.
Okay, thank you. So one of our invited speakers is Lawton Merritt out of Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And we are going to share Lil Donnie's student workbook, which is a life skills and literacy manual for building hope. The event is actually partly a fundraiser. We're just circulating dollars for the Black Youth Metropolis and the inner city youth organization to work with youth to encourage entrepreneurship and educational excellence. Mm. So I do have some invitees from the educational field, of course, community leaders. We have music, live band, and so forth. My phone number, if you'd like to, and those listening, to text for a link to the website and for to go on the guest list is 262-733-4080.
4080. Okay. And what's your name again? Reba?
Reba the teacher. I just tell people when I'm in passing on moving around, Google Reba the teacher and my website will pop up. It'll say Reba La Maestra in Spanish, but it means Reba the teacher, so it still pops up.
Absolutely.
Myself or Reba McIntyre.
And what's the name of the program? You said something about hope.
Okay, so Lil Donnie's student workbook is the material that we're marketing. It's a curriculum, a life skills and literacy manual for building hope. So it's Lil Donnie, student workbook.
Okay. Well, there's a quote there's a quote that's saying hope is being able to see that there is light despite all of the darkness. And I look forward, and it was the last thing that was left in Pandora's box, hope. So rather than saying, I hope I'll see you there, I will definitely see you there.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. And I'm excited to share that your mom, I remember hearing your mom's name just throughout my childhood, and she was certainly one of the great leaders who my family talked about, Travis Realty and so forth, Dempsey Travis and so forth. So there were certain names that were mentioned when I was growing up, and so I'm so excited to be connected to you, and I will certainly – I'd love to show a clip of the 60 Minutes video because it does remind us that all children have the ability to learn. And as a status teacher, my special needs students sometimes outshine my honor roll students, my honors level students. So, it's just about how to nurture that genius inside of our youth. So thank you so much.
You're welcome. We actually had a student. There was it was from a very prestigious law firm there in Chicago. Actually, one of the cases that they had worked on was actually Watergate back in the day. But I bring that up in which to say that that one of the senior partners from that firm brought his child all the way to the west side of Chicago. She was autistic, and my mother was able to work with her and help her as far as what you just said, as far as some of your special needs. And sometimes it really takes a special teacher to work with those that that learn differently, and then have the what society or what has been labeled as a special need. It just you look at the story of Helen Keller and then her teacher. I tell the students that that broken watches are right 2 times a day, and they're broken. They don't even work. So every child is capable of doing something.
That's right.
Well, Miss Collins was definitely an innovator, and she did all that with her family's help. Without social media, imagine if there was a Marva Collins app. Just an app.
Amen.
Well,
you know what? Just the collection, and without being overly complimentary, what Chris is doing, what Reva's doing, just an app where everyone could plug in. Working there in Newark, I see that the city pays people to pick up trash, and they're paying them $15 an hour, and that's not even being done correctly. That really, that whole Booker T. Washington, pulling yourself up by your bootstraps and really wanting to do something. Chris, what Chris said just is entrenched in my everything that I do, that failure is so much more difficult to deal with than trying to be a success. During Hurricane Katrina, you had people that were breaking into Walmart taking the plastic screen TVs and DVDs, and there's 20 feet of water outside. I don't condone thievery, but someone that was thinking took scuba gear and robbed the boats that had sank in Lake Pontchartrain. That's someone who can think. Like I said, I don't condone that. It's just the mere fact of thinking. Rather than taking TVs and DVDs and there's 20 feet of water out there, it takes some. Put forth the energy. If you put the same energy that you take to find somewhere to sleep each night, to do what Chris said, take that rivet gun or whatever that concept was, and put some screws in a piece of metal and create a sustainable home for someone, that's the ticket there. It doesn't say that you have to be on staff at someone's hospital. It doesn't say that you have to be a poet laureate. Doesn't say that you have to have a master's or a doctorate, but you have to have the will and the want to be better and to do better.
That's right. Boy, you couldn't set it any better right there.
Right.
I got an eighth grade education, but I got will.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, a prophet is never more revered than when he's away from home. L.A., I have more than just a friend in Jesus. I have one in you and your listening audience, and I appreciate each and every time that you give me the privilege, and I mean that, the privilege of being able to be a voice on the instrument that you use to project your views and your thoughts. And I look forward to what this new year can bring. And I'll close with that. Every year, people make all of these New Year's, I'm going to do things, but this is what, who can I save in the new year? And when you're looking at saving other people, charity begins at home. What Chris is doing and what I'm doing and what Reeve is doing is save yourself. Save yourself to the point where you can help to save others, and it's just such a heartwarming gift. It surpasses anything that you can buy in any store. There's no amount of money that can give you. L.A., the stories that I was sharing with you, the child who says, Mr. Collins, I really feel good about me when I'm with you. The prisoner that's sitting right there teaching other prisoners in his cell the concepts that I have shared with them. The kindergartner that's talking about Bernoulli's principle of fluid dynamics. That's when you're leaving a positive footprint on humanity.
Well, Patrick, thank you for coming on, particularly during this holiday season. It's a good way to wrap up this year and to help give us that momentum that we have going for 2023. We'll be in touch because, like I say, it's that Marva Collins brand, because that's what it is, a brand. It's so much there. And I'll probably watch your movie again.
I'd watch it
over the weekend.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, over the weekend. So,
If
you haven't watched the Marva Collins story, watch it. And Reba, if you want to throw in anything, I'll let you have the last word with Patrick before we wrap up for today.
Okay. Again, for the listening audience, we are going to be at the Grand Ballroom Chicago at 6351 South Cottage Grove on Friday, February 3rd, for the first annual Black Youth Metropolis Fall, the Fine and Performing Arts Design Educational Conference. So we're going to have a live band. My song, Celebrate Your Life, so that's our theme, Celebrate Your Life, is on YouTube. You can just Google Reba, R-E-B-A, Celebrate Your Life, and you guys will check that. You can check that song out. The phone number is 262-733-4080. And thanks for listening.
All right.
Reba, my
everyone,
wife and I will see you there.
All thanks
right.
Again. Okay.
Thank you, gentlemen. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you. Well done.
Thank you.